Welcome to the Samuel Leeds podcast. On this week's episode, we're going to be talking about property development and how you can make six figures as a property developer, discussing the ups and downs, the highs and lows, and sharing some of mine and my business partner's personal failures. So our listeners are ridiculously blessed and fortunate to have you on the channel. Dude, you are the most expert property developer person that comes on the channel, but you're the hardest person to get on the channel. You're like,
to be fair, I get that a lot. Hardest person to get a hold of.
Indie man. That's true. Friggin' successful, killing it. I've only ever had you on the channel once before. So for anyone that doesn't know, this is Ben Machakanyanga.
Hey guys.
I only married Amanda to get closer to Ben.
Yep. I can believe that. Now I'm only joking.
But you know what though, Ben? You know what though, Ben? Since we partnered up,
yes,
and joined forces, the property business is taken to new heights.
It has been an amazing journey so far. And I think we are set for even higher heights.
Well, I went from having a very residential portfolio.
Yeah.
But I know I had the castle and stuff like that, but that was the absolute golden bad gem. Boy. That was the bad boy. you're at a party and there's all these little kids and there's this one overgrown big kid. That was the castle in my property portfolio.
Well, we're still nurturing the big cat, the big bad boy.
Yeah, we are. But you know, since you came on, we've bought land, built houses.
Yep.
We've got so many millions and millions of pounds in the pipeline of deals.
Yep.
So now it's been awesome. How have you found like the last 6 months?
It's been incredible. Obviously a lot different to what I was doing, in the sense that I'm out and about literally all the time, looking at land, looking at new opportunities, analyzing stuff, running DD, knowing that we are betting on ourselves to make it happen.
Well, the thing is now, instead of you working hard to try and make someone else rich, you're now working hard making yourself rich.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Which is awesome.
Making ourselves rich, for sure.
You know, pay yourself a six-figure salary, which is awesome. I don't pay myself a ridiculous salary. I think my salary is humble, you know. But it's not about the money. It's about the enjoyment.
It's about the journey, for sure. It's never going to... No matter which road you take in life, none of it's ever going to be easy. You just have to grind and go hard and get it.
Talk to me about the castle.
Castle, man. I'm up there tomorrow.
You're there tomorrow?
I'm there tomorrow.
You live at the castle. You know what's
at the moment, I might as well move in, to be honest.
You can move in until it's done, and then I'll move in and you can move out.
Well, I won't give you the keys.
We almost joke around, don't we? Sometimes you do a lot of the work and then I jump in at the end and take the glory.
Yeah, we'll see what's going to happen. Actually, look out for that one, because we'll be doing an update. But watch, we'll see if I'm there or if there, but we'll see.
It'll be both of us, but you'll be slightly standing behind me.
Just right directly behind you.
No, but honestly though, Ben, you are the make it happen person. You're the director of the property company.
Yep.
You find the deals, you cost manage the deals. 16 years in construction, 16 years in the industry, which is awesome. And we've had so many deals recently that have been almost...
I have to give you this.
Go on.
Samuel always used to bring the small deals that we used to go, I don't want to look at that. But actually, recently, you've been passing along some really good, even deals.
Thank you.
So I have to give you that one.
I appreciate that. Yeah, because you used to laugh at my deals. You were like, what? We're only going to make 100 grand? Oh, no thanks. It's not worth the trouble.
But yeah, actually, yeah, there's a couple. I won't go into too much details about them, but probably maybe for the next show, for the next... episode we might discuss a bit more.
Do you know what's funny though, with the type of deals that we're doing together?
Yes.
Now, like my small deals, if I'm stood outside a house, a residential house, no one can know where that house is, because every house kind of looks similar. So if I'm in Sunderland, stood outside a mid-terraced house with a white door, no one knows the house.
Yeah.
Whereas when the deals that we're doing, and it's stuff like an ex-bowling club, and it's just so obvious. If we film it, everybody will know it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then what happens is people come in, try and scupper
we've
it.
We've had it twice, haven't we, to be fair? I don't know if you've shared this before, but we had the first one was we're going to see a piece of land in the middle of nowhere. And
they recognized
it. So you posted a picture and someone commented, I know where that is.
They recognized the grass.
And then the second time.
I thought I was safe standing in a... I was literally standing in a field and I just took it and I thought, I'm going to do a selfie. No one will know. And then people are like, I know. And they described, that is at this location,
XYZ.
The planning permission. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And what was the other time?
The second time, we're in East Midlands.
Yeah.
We're at a site. We're with a famous investor.
Yes.
And someone walked about 200 meters. And we're thinking, let's try walk away. But we couldn't, because it was now awkward. And the person came across and they gave you a handshake and they recognized you and they didn't recognize the famous investor. It was like, what?
Yeah, because he was more famous than I am.
Yeah,
I didn't let him live that down either. I was like taking the mick out.
And that's the last time I've taken Samuel.
An investor
anyway.
Call him right now. This is your life. This is your life right now. I'm going to answer this. How do I answer?
I think you've answered.
Yes. What's up, Darren Andrews?
How are you doing?
I'm well. I'm just with Ben. We're just filming a live podcast.
Oh, beautiful. Live?
Yeah, man. You're on the podcast right now.
How's it all going?
It's going really well. I'm excited to be doing some more deals with you over the coming weeks and months.
Excellent. Good to hear. We're very excited as well.
So, awesome. Well, I'll get Ben to give you a call back when we're done.
No worries, guys. Have fun.
See you later. Bye.
This is awesome when you've got business partners who actually answer your phone as well.
Well, I just thought I can't let it just vibrate forever.
I actually didn't even hear it vibrate, to be honest.
It was just me. It was very obvious.
How'd you like my new phone?
But the thing is, with people recognizing deals, we do have to keep it low-key. That's why you hide away from YouTube. But I've been talking to you a lot about personal brand recently.
You have been talking to me about personal brand.
What about
brand?
When you're like, oh, and you're doing a video and you're like, this is for my YouTube channel. I was like, you got a YouTube channel? You're like, I went on it and you're like, well, I haven't actually launched it.
But it's coming. And this one will be the second video on it.
Yes.
So it's going to be awesome because obviously it's MacLeads related.
Yes.
Big deal right now.
You know what? MacLeads. So MacLeads.co.uk.
Yeah.
Spell MacLeads.
That's it.
That's your surname and my surname.
Boom.
Although if it was Machekanyanga Leeds, it might be a little bit hard to remember.
It'd be a lot of copy and pasting.
I had to learn to spell Machekanyanga. I remember sat in McDonald's with a little napkin just practicing how to spell Machekanyanga.
And you've got it right down to the pat. I was well impressed. Right down. I met you, you mentioned it. You said it straight away.
Machekanyanga. And it means what? Cut horn.
Cutting horns. Yeah, and that's what we do. Maybe not so much.
We cut deals, man. Okay, so we've got a lot of business partners. And here's a really interesting thing as well. I was stopping my own growth because I was thinking, I only want to invest my own money.
Yes.
I don't want to be over leveraged. But then I'm thinking, I'm teaching people how to invest other people's money. Yeah. That's how I got started. But now I've got too lazy. Grant Cardone kicked my ass. I've told the story a million times of what Grant Cardone said to me, told me I was over the hill.
Mm-hmm.
He's in better shape than me at the time. Maybe now I'm catching him up. Yeah. He's more rich than I am. He's telling me I'm over the hill. I'm 28. He's in his 60s. So I said, what do I need to do differently? He said, you need to start joint venturing. You need to collaborate in business. Yeah. You need to collaborate in property. You need to open the doors more.
Yes.
You need to stop being so small-minded and investing in yourself. You need to sell some of your smaller houses. You need to refinance some of your bigger houses. So I've sold houses, man. Do you know how many houses I've sold over the last couple
months? How many this month?
I have sold 7 houses this month.
Jesus.
7 houses. And the thing is, it's not that I'm selling off my properties.
Yeah.
I'm selling them to put them into bigger deals.
Bring the money in. Come on, MacLeads, bring it over.
Bring the money in.
We'll sort it out.
We've been tight, though, cash flow-wise.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't lie. It's not all been rainbows.
No, it's not. And that's what I was saying about the journey. You know, you have to roll with the punches.
Because the thing is, I have sold some houses, refinancing and stuff like that. But then I was thinking, oh, with that money, we'll put it into this project, and the other project.
Yeah.
We committed to the projects. But then, unfortunately, property is not a liquid business.
It's not.
It takes time.
It does take time.
So I had some things fall through and some lending take forever and stuff like that, which then made us stretched. So I think that, how do you stop as a developer or as a property businessman doing bigger deals?
Yeah.
How do you stop this whole
thing from happening?
Yeah. How do you risk assess things?
For everything that we're doing now. So aside from the usual DD, when we'll talk about the Great Yarmouth in a few moments, but I suppose it's basically cash flowing. So as part of the DD, one of the key things that I like to do, which is foolproofing us, I suppose, as MacLeads, is we'll get our appraisal, we'll do as much DD as we can on it, but we'll send it out to financiers and see, oh, what's your appetite to lend us this if we got it? And if you know in advance, before we buy something, that, there's a 90% chance or 100% chance we can get the funding for it.
Yeah.
It's obviously alleviates that pressure and that risk because as you know, the way we structure our deals, we include our costs for managing it.
Mm.
And so that means that our salaries are covered and our overhead costs for our offices, our staff, etc. So that's all covered in there. And each month when work is done, when we get the contractor's valuations or whatever, we send the bill, including our costs, to the financier to say, we've incurred X amount of costs, including our time and efforts this month, and this is how much it is, and can you please pay us? So we are covered at every single point of the process. Yes. And then we still enjoy the big pie right at the end with the profit share.
And you have to have a lot of profit in these deals. There's so many people bringing me deals. I'm looking at doing this. I'm going to make 10% on the deal. And it's like, you know what? That doesn't leave you enough cushion, man.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Like the castle, we had a lot of cushion. And that's why when things have gone a little bit, not wrong, but when we've found
the
things,
pressure's on,
it doesn't matter too much because we've got
a good cushion.
We've got a seven-figure profit in it. So it's kind of all good. But you need that cushion,
You definitely need that cushion.
And I think as well for me, like my business, if I had the most conservative, frugal month ever, where I didn't buy any properties, I didn't run any events, just paying for my staff and my mortgages and stuff like that, it's over £250,000 a month. So I've got £250,000 a month in overheads that has to be paid for. Like, that's big.
It's big.
That's big.
Man, £250,000, man.
£250,000 every month. So it's kind of like, when I started, I remember getting my first, like, rent-to-rent deal on my first property, and I'm like, oh my gosh, if the tenants move out, I've got to find £200. Now it's like, I've got to find £250,000.
What are you going to do?
You know, which is, I mean, do you think that you need a bit of an appetite for risk, or do you think you can do it so that it is completely safe?
Nothing's ever completely safe, that's for sure. It's more how you manage the risk and your coping mechanism with it.
Yeah.
You're always going to have the risk. And some people, their risk tolerance is higher than others.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what sets people apart in terms of success as well.
Yeah.
So it's being able to take the risk and also know how to manage the risk.
But the thing is, though, as well, with the risk is, like, I was doing the most safe investments ever a year ago.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, money lending.
Yes.
So I'd lend someone money. They'd pay me 17% return, guaranteed. Mm. I'd have a charge on the property. So if they didn't pay me, I'd take the property.
Yes.
They'd also be a guarantor as well, personally. I know they've got other properties. So it's like, that's not really risky. I mean, you can say anything's got risk, but you can have money in the bank and the bank can go bust.
It can do, so sure, 100%.
You know, like, things can happen. There could be a plague and we could all die. You could get hit by a bus tomorrow. You could get robbed. You could... So and sometimes people try and protect themselves so much, like, they don't trust the bank, so they put it in Bitcoin. Yeah, but Bitcoin could crash. There's always something.
Risk. Always going to be risk.
So I guess the key is to make it as risk-free as possible.
Yeah.
But usually, the higher reward, the higher the risk.
Yeah, exactly. And so long as you've got the backstops to manage the risk that's remaining, the residual risk, you're fine. So, for example, on our property deals, what we do is we rely on consultants, professional indemnity insurance, and also we also get project insurance as well.
Yeah.
And they all cover certain amounts of risk, but each time we pay someone to take on a bit of risk, fair enough, it eats into our profit, but we stay sane as we possibly can.
The thing that we see a lot is developers starting a project and can't finish it.
Mm.
And then you can often get a really good deal.
100%.
But I've been in the situation where I've always been that failed developer.
Do you know what? I don't think there's a developer who hasn't had a tough project.
No.
And the key thing that we know is giving
away stupid deals. And you do.
Give away profits. Yeah,
but
give away
the thing
profits.
I had to do this with the castle. When I bought the castle, I had bridging. Then the bridging fell.
Yeah.
And then I had to raise personal money, gave away very good returns, which we're actually paying back now. Then the bridging came in, and it's like when you get stuck, what about that guy that we spoke to who got, I don't know how much I can say, but I'll just give the very generic terms.
Yeah, go on.
Bought a piece of land, got planning permission for 111 houses, did four, ran out of money.
Yep.
And then said to us, geez, do you want the rest?
Yeah, we're looking into that right now.
Right, but when people get stuck, you can often help them.
Definitely can help.
And I've been on the receiving end of that. Yeah. And it's so funny because you're like, thank you so much. You're so grateful. But you're actually kind of getting exploited.
Ka-ching, 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 running away.
Yeah, honestly. You know, I've had it where I've had to call people up and I've said, like...
It's the joys of development, isn't it?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But what I'm learning more than anything now is cash flow management, knowing what's coming in. We're getting a finance director. Yes. At the moment, we've got a full-time accountant, we've got a full-time finance manager, we've got a little finance team. I think it's like three or four of them, full-time. But now we're looking to get a finance director just to take away the pressure of... Because I've done stuff, though, where I've taken bridging finance out. Expensive. I know I'm going to make a load of money, so it's okay. But then I've got money sat in properties where I could refinance and pay 3%. Yes. But I haven't got time. But if I'd have planned it better...
You could have, yeah.
Preparation,
it's that game, isn't it? Yeah, and you live and you learn, don't you? And the key thing is learning the lesson, not focusing too much on the ass kicking, I suppose. And you've done that.
Yeah.
And you're doing that. And
but luckily, because I've got, you know, I'm quite wealthy.
Yeah.
And I've got money. I'm all right. But I feel like if I'd have done this game 10 years ago, I could have gone bankrupt.
Yeah, I feel you. Definitely.
Because if you can't get the money. Tough. I remember being stressed out about being able to pay my grandma back. Borrowed 15 grand from my grandma. Bought a house. I think I was 19 when I bought the house. And I remember telling her I'll pay her back after 5 years. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to pay back. Losing sleep, man. What happens if I've only got 2 more years I have to pay my grandma back? How am I going to get the 15 grand? But then actually the property went up in value. I was all good. And she ended up wanting to extend it anyway. But now it's like, if you said you need 15 grand, like, you know, that would...
that would be all right.
No, it's like
that's
now it's
it.
Like, oh, you need to get a million next month.
I've rang you a few times saying that.
How many people as well that are doing this type of industry that are in property like this talk about it on YouTube? None.
Ironically, we were talking about that just before the show started, just when you went out to get a coffee, saying there's not a lot of people who talk about the things, number one, that they go through, the bad lessons and the great lessons.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because I feel the more and more people shared.
Yeah.
Like this, the better and better people would be at developing and sharing content and info.
I got to the point where I could literally just retire forever. You know this. Retire forever and live off of my passive income.
Mm.
Never have to push it on the property side. Yes. Relax. I can have a bit of a training business because I enjoy speaking.
You get
teaching.
So bored because I know you so well.
I get so bored. But then that's when it's like when Grant Cardone's like over the hill. So now I'm thinking, how can I take my property business... Not just ticking over, but to a whole new level. And I'm pushing myself. I'm stretching, and we've been putting the last sort of 6 months £250,000 every month into the development business.
Yes.
And I've said to you now, I want to even start using other people's money more.
Mm.
So, and I mean, we're having some good conversations.
We're working on that. Yeah, we're having some great conversations, and
doing deals with people.
Doing deals with people. Obviously, just received a phone call just there. Shout out to Darren.
Yeah, Darren. Do you know what?
He's an awesome guy.
He's
an awesome guy, and that's the thing. I think we've said this right from the beginning. Whilst we want to work with absolutely everybody, I know we can't, but we have to work with people we can actually work with.
I'm sure
Darren is one of those guys.
Darren's done the crash course. Darren's on the academy. I think Darren only did the academy just to get our attention, which is cool. But I've had people do this. Same as Kevin. Kevin Stewart plays for Hull. He joined the academy. But I think part of the reason he did that was just to kind of get my attention.
I'm here.
Yeah. Because if someone rings me up, oh, Samuel, I want to chat. Samuel, can we talk? Samuel, can we meet? It's like,
hard, isn't it?
No, I mean, dude, I get 100 messages like that a day. But okay, he's joined the academy.
Mm.
He's a pro football player.
Yep.
And he messages me. I'm like, all right, cool. I'll jump on a call with him. Yeah. You know?
Great guy.
And then next thing, we spent a day with him.
Yeah.
Deals. And he's joint venture. He sent me a deal. We were about to do a joint venture with him.
Mm.
I can't remember where that one was now. But anyway, yes. We spent a day with him. And then he messaged me and he said, actually, Samuel, there's a guy who I met from my YouTube channel, one of my YouTube guys.
Yeah.
We did a video together and he said, he's got a deal and I'm interested in doing the deal with him instead of you.
Yeah.
Now, from my perspective, genuinely, bottom of my heart, I don't care if he does a deal with me, if he does a deal with someone else.
Yep.
I just want the dude to succeed. And I spoke to him. I looked over the deal with someone else, and he said, "I'll only do it, you know, if you kind of check it over and tell me it's good." You did as well.
Yeah, we both did.
Spent hours over it.
Yeah.
And said to him, "It's great. Go ahead."
Definitely.
And that's awesome. And then in this industry, you want to go far. You've just got to be.
That's what we're about.
Helping people, adding value, creating good karma.
You never know who's going to bring you your next deal.
Nah.
So it's always about trying to keep that relationship going. Everybody wins. There's enough slices of pie to go around. So it's not being greedy about
it. But people are greedy, though.
they are some very greedy people, and I've worked for some very greedy investors or developers in the past, and they're the ones that their projects always go wrong.
Do they?
Yeah.
Because the thing is, some business people, why we do business, we want everything to be win-win. Not just win-win. Win-win-win-win-win-win.
Round the table.
We want the builders to win.
Everybody.
We want the JV partners. We want the buyers at the end.
The sources.
Everyone.
Everybody has to get
and
something.
We believe that with the right deals, everyone can win. But some people, though, they don't want that. They want lose-win. They want to buy the builders as little as possible. Yeah. They want to get the greediest percentages with the joint venture partners. Yeah. They want to get... You know, do the littlest work so that the property looks okay, but then sell it, and then the buyer ends up.
It's a dud.
Yeah, but that's how they work, and I just.
Yeah, Mac Leeds, we're not about that.
No. tell me about your visions for this year.
My visions for this year. So we are working obviously with a few joint venture partners.
Yeah.
We're looking to scale that.
Yeah.
And working with even more investors and create our own. Pool of cash that we can readily invest in the great deals that we've already got for a guaranteed return, for a hands-off investment for anybody willing to invest. We do have a cutoff point though, because we can't take like 100 quid here and there.
Yes. So basically, if someone's got say 100 grand,
I was actually working on 250 grand.
250.
Yeah.
So they got grand. Okay. So they've got 100, 200. Or
we'll
so,
listen.
And they want to have a chat we'll and listen, look at doing stuff. What they go on? They go on MacLeads website.
MacLeads website, drop us a note.
But there has to be, I mean, we can't talk about publicly on YouTube. We can't talk about, you know, these are the kind of returns and this is the kind of deal. It's against FCA regulations. We just can't do that. So basically, if there's a qualified investor, I think the definition of a qualified investor according to the FCA is, I think you need 100 grand. That's why I said 100 grand, I think. But if you're a qualified investor and you want to do development, you want to go for some big deals, you're up for having a conversation.
100%.
Having 100%. A conversation, seeing if we can do some business together. Yeah. That's awesome. I said on my YouTube video a few months back, I said 2020, I just want to do two deals personally, and I want them to be big deals.
Yes.
I want to make £1 million on each deal. I want to make a couple mil, and I'm happy. Rather than doing 15, like the previous years, where I've done like 10, 20 deals or whatever, but then actually the profit's been less. But at the moment, at this rate, we've kind of like got... A couple of deals already in the bag.
Yes.
But
definitely.
I'm excited.
100% excited. 100% excited. But yeah, just to... I know we mentioned we're going to chat about the Great Yarmouth deal.
Yes, because that was the deal that actually fell through.
It actually fell
and
through.
And I like to focus on the bad. Honestly, because when I'm talking about rent-to-rents and lease options and HMOs and all this stuff, small deals, I'm like, guys, this is easy if you do it right. But development, I don't want to tell people... Anyone can do this. It's easy because do you know what? When you're talking, putting six figures into deals and stuff, honestly, you don't know what you're doing. You can lose it.
You definitely can. And you can lose. The first deal can be your last deal.
Yeah.
If you get to the end of it.
And that's the last thing I want, because I'm trying to create people on the planet. I'm trying to create more people that are financially free.
Yeah.
I'm trying to create people who success stories. Mm. The last thing I want is people commenting on my YouTube saying, Samuel, I did a deal, lost everything. Now I hate property. Oh, and I hate you too. Like, I just want people to succeed. So my advice would be, if you're doing a big deal, make sure you either joint venture with someone that's got experience, like us, for instance, who's got experience, we'll potentially joint venture.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're not going to JV, you're doing it on your own, start with a small deal.
Definitely.
And work your way up, because you're always going to make mistakes on your first deal.
100%.
But yeah, talk to me about Great Yarmouth deal.
Yeah, it's a Great Yarmouth. One of your students came to us with that deal.
That's why I run a training business, bro.
Yeah, exactly. He came to us with a deal, and I actually had a chat with him at the DFE, the first time I had ever been.
Deal finding stuff.
That's the day he actually signed up for the academy, so
good.
He's doing quite well.
You want to get in with us, you've got to come to the training.
That's
how it starts.
It's the networking.
All
around.
Starts at the crash course,
and
baby.
Yeah, so I've actually developed a good relationship with him. But anyway, down to the deal. It was for 7 properties in Great Yarmouth, a part of the world I'd never been in and never thought I'd ever go.
Mm.
But the deal looked good on paper. So I went out and had a look at it.
Is this Chris?
No, this is Raleigh.
Okay.
Yeah. Working on something with Chris as well.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. This is Raleigh Chiwuta, and he lives in Norwich area.
Yeah.
And anyway, it's got planning already, which is great. Big tick in the box, de-risked.
So what is
way.
It? What is it?
So seven houses, 3-bed houses. In a nice little secluded plot off the main road, look great on paper. The fact, the numbers, I suppose, which we're interested in, the GDV was about 1.4.
GDV meaning end value, right?
Yeah, that's it, gross development value. Yeah. And the cost to build it all was just under £1 million at £950,000.
So you're buying a piece of land?
Yep.
For how much?
280.
So you're buying a
that
piece
was
of
a
land.
Negotiated price as well.
Okay, so you're buying the land for 280.
Yeah.
You're then spending $1 million.
That was included in the cost.
Okay, so you're spending like £720,000.
Yeah.
So all in is £1 million. Yeah. And then the GDV, gross development value, is 1.4.
Yeah.
So you've made
£400,000.
£400,000.
Yeah.
Planning permission.
Planning permission already. It was going to be a relatively quick build.
Got those three figures. Purchase price, development cost, end value.
Yes.
Nice. But, bam, bam, bam.
But, so.
Problem.
The list of the DD. I'll go through a couple of things. I'd made a note just to keep me on topic.
And you know what? This is so important as well. Because the thing is, if you weren't a conservative investor, if we weren't conservative.
Yeah.
We didn't do all our due diligence hardcore because we are quite conservative. Although we're young and I'm very loud. Actually, I'm one of the most negative people when it comes to property, right? I'm like, what's the GDV? You know, and then I'll be like, have you got a RICS value? And let me, like, I'm really conservative. You're even more conservative than I am. So before
we balance that well.
So before we bought the land, we did our due diligence. And not only that, but also the due diligence that we did, a lot of people have to pay for surveys and stuff, but because we've got good relationships, we can kind of lean into.
Yeah,
so definitely. What did we find?
We get a good find. The SI checked out, which is site investigation. The land was looking all right. Environmental survey was looking all right. But we had a flood risk assessment, which is what I'll just focus on rather than going through the full list of DD items. So the flood risk assessment is basically if you're building in an area that's near a river, of which this one is, it can be within a flood zone. It is a problem, but sometimes it's not so much of a problem, but in this particular case it was, because it's a flood zone 3 area, and I was looking to potentially look past that if the person who then is going to buy it can get insurance on it easily.
Yeah.
Because then obviously we would then build. We don't want to hold on to any of this stock. We want to sell it all quickly.
Yeah.
Which is the key, because we want to get our cash back out. If it was to rent, as in to keep and rent, potentially at a push, maybe. But because of the fact that it was actually in a flood risk and it was classified as an actual risk of something actually happening, we decided to pass on it, which is a bit unfortunate.
Because the thing is, even if we kept it and rented it ourselves, I mean, there could be a flood, but really the risk is probably not there being a flood. From our point of view, it's actually our exit strategy to sell it is going to become really tough because no one's going to want to buy it.
That's it.
Because it's going to come up on a red flag when they buy it. Their solicitor's going to flag
exactly,
it up.
Exactly, yeah.
Then they're going to get their insurance quote. It's going to be sky high.
Yeah. And we did all that, didn't we? We rang the insurance guys to ask them, hypothetically, you know, would you insure this? And we had two or three insurers saying, yeah, we could, but X, Y, and Z reasons. And those bits of concern were like, actually, you know what? Maybe it's just being greedy. Let's just step
away. So is this something that you have to check every time you're buying a piece of land?
Every time I put, that's one of the first things I check.
You check whether there's a flood risk.
Flood risks, what it was previously used for.
Yeah.
And what's it near as well.
And how do you check that? How do you check if there's...
There's the Environment Agency.
Yeah.
So I've got some good contacts, and there's online software that you can easily Google and try.
If you just Google flood risk check.
Flood risk check. There's software that you can pay for. Sometimes you can get like free trials for like 14 days and stuff like that.
But for you, it's just picking up a phone, right?
Pick up the phone. Speak to.
So on that alone, would that, because I know there's some other issues as well, but that alone, would that be enough for you to pull out?
No. So that was one. That was probably 75%.
That was like, oh man.
That was like 75% of the
issue.
It was also tip the balance.
I know as well that there was some issues with us not being able to get in contact with the neighbors.
Yeah. So there was this right next to the site. There's a massive derelict warehouse.
Yeah.
And because the site layout that got planning.
Yeah.
The foundations of the houses were right up against the foundations of this building. We didn't know who the building owner was. We couldn't get in touch with them. We couldn't find out any information about them. They weren't on the registry. It was quite difficult to find. So we thought, in the time that we have to move, it's going to take too much time and hassle. And we don't want to have to buy something and then get held to ransom.
Oh, yeah, because that was another thing. There was a potential ransom strip.
Yeah, there was. So the ransom strip.
Yeah.
Right, so
That's a nasty thing.
That's a nasty thing. So off the main road, we were in a nice location because we were like behind all the houses, a bit of greenery, the standard. It looked amazing driving up to it. But along the side road, I guess, off the main road. There's some houses there that are owned, and that's their main access. And the agent who was trying to sell it to us said, oh, no, it's part of the title deeds of the houses and stuff. Anyway, land registry, obviously, quick check who owns what. And it wasn't 100% clear. And then after some more phone calls, we found out, yeah, we own it. But because these other houses have been accessing it for so long, we started thinking, what trouble could we get into if we wanted to say to them, listen, you're going to have piling rigs coming across, all this construction plant coming down this road nonstop all day, every day.
Yes.
And get permission to amicably build. We may have had to pay some compensation to them. And who knows what their compensation
is. And also, who knows legally if they've been using that as theirs. Like, do you know you have squatter's rights? if someone's lived in a house for, I don't know what the period of time is.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
But it's just a risk that they can say, look, man, this is our only access. We've been using this for years. Therefore, if you want to use it and you want to drive all your stuff, you have to pay us. And then they could quote us whatever they want. It's just a potential problem.
It's just an annoying problem when there are obviously so many more sites in the country to be able to be found. So you just have to be a bit patient.
But you know what, though? A lot of people, especially on their first deal, they see a few problems. And entrepreneurs are generally optimists.
Yes.
I am a natural born optimist.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, it'll be okay. Yes. Oh, and you really want the deal to happen. Oh, there's a bit of a flood risk. Yeah, but it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But you can't think like that.
No. First deal
might not be fine. It might not be fine.
It might not be fine.
Find something, crunch the numbers, do due diligence, and make sure that there's you've de-risked the heck out of it.
As much as you can.
Yeah.
So unfortunately we had to pull out. But I spoke to him today, and I said to him, listen, don't lose heart, because this was going to be his first sort of deal with commission. I said, find another one, and fire it through. And he was quite happy that we actually took our time to look at it as well, which was great.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, anybody who's on Samuel's Academy, if you've got a decent opportunity that you think, yeah, this might be a goal, feel free to share it.
On the Mac Leeds website, which is macleeds.co.uk.
Yes.
If people have got deals.
Yep.
That they want, and there's got to be good profit. If they're big development deals, and I'm talking maybe a minimum 100 grand profit in the deal, minimum, then send it to us, we'll have a look.
Yeah, we'll send you some quick comments.
If you're an Academy member, of course, then we'll look at it properly. But if you're not, and it's still, you can send it if it's really juicy. If we don't respond, it means we're not interested.
Yeah,
and
then we'll always try to respond, but there's only so much time we've got in a day.
And if you've got money, and you want to put it into deals, get in touch. We can have a chat. And we are open to collaborations.
100%. And if you just want hands off, listen, I've got money in the bank, it's just sat there doing nothing, and you want to invest.
Yeah, speak to us. I mean, sometimes people ask for training on development. It's something that we might do down the line.
Yeah, at some point.
But the best way to learn is to do.
Best way to learn.
So probably I would suggest do it with us.
Yeah.
Do it with us.
Somebody knows what they're doing.
But we have so many interesting deals. And you've got to walk away. Another thing is, talk to me, Ben, about you. I know you've seen, and I've seen it, egos ruin people's deals.
Oh, geez, man. Yeah. Egos. You don't want any egos in development. Like,
talk to me about that.
So a lot of people think they're very, very qualified to be developers, but sometimes it's not necessarily that they're qualified. It's just that they've got a big ego. Their dad did it, their auntie did it, or whatever, and they've got purse strings and they got contacts, etc. But egos can get in the way.
Yeah.
It really can get in the way.
I've seen egos get in the way whereby there's a project going on and the developer is so bothered about seeing the project finish because of their own ego, they won't walk away from it.
That's the other side of the coin, definitely, yeah. Formulas over feelings, right?
Yeah. You feel like I need to finish this because I started it. But actually, winners quit, man.
Yeah, 100%. You have to know when. You just have to know when.
And if you can walk away today and make nothing,
that's fine.
But if you continued with it, you might make 100 grand, but you might lose a million. Walk away. Best case, worst case, likely case.
100%.
If the worst case is going to bankrupt you, walk away. Yeah.
Don't get caught up in the feelings.
Nah.
It's only a project.
Yeah.
It's only a project.
Another thing is, people get caught up in the feelings whereby they're like, it's got to be about the money, man. It's got to be about the money.
That's the reason why it's a business.
But what about that deal that we're doing at the moment? I won't go into the details of it.
Yeah.
But where there's a couple of people involved and they're like saying, oh, I want it to be like this and this would be ideal and I want it to be like this. And it's like, to be honest, just do what makes money.
Just
like,
do what makes money. Just
I guess the exception to that, what about like with the castle, for instance?
Yeah.
We're quite sentimental about the castle.
Mm-hmm.
We love it. And although we are going to make good money on the castle, and you've even come on that and you're managing it, so you're even going to get a slice of the profits, which is going to be sick. But the thing is, that's not just about the money for us, is it, the castle?
No, the castle is a baby, man.
Where's the contradiction? That sounds like a contradiction now, because I'm saying it's about the money, but then
the thing is, you have to think about the long-term game. So if there's emotions definitely tied to it, but there's such a much bigger game to it, in the sense that if we get that completed, or when we get that completed, rather, how many councils will be like, oh, you guys did that restoration.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, that is the most notable Grade 2 listed restoration project up and down the country.
Yeah.
And Heritage England are all over that. They're watching us like with hawk eyes, you know. They every time they come on, they've got such great things to say, and they're really looking forward to seeing it done. So once you get that done, just think of how many more recommendations. Be like, oh, you've got that building up in Scotland or down in Bristol, wherever it's going to be. I know a developer who did a great job in Ribsford. You want to have a chat with them to see what they can do? Do you know what I mean? So it opens up.
Also, as well, opens up a lot from a financial point of view, because of the history. And I mean, the free French soldiers have literally flown down from France to take me out for dinner in Mayfair, London.
Imagine that.
They want to come down to the castle upon completion and celebrate. I think that the value, I mean, when I bought the castle, it made the newspapers. Mm. When I started the works, it made the newspapers. Upon completion, I just think the value of that, given the history and the majestic beauty of it. There's some things you can't put a
number on it.
No. But I think the value, I know we've had it valued at 6 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that, and 6 million, don't get me wrong, I'm really happy with 6 million. Yeah. But I think that it will be a lot more than that. What do you think?
The value. See, the value, it's hard to say.
Down the line.
Yeah. I think down the line it'll be great. Because
I'm talking about next year. I'm talking about in a few years. In the
future, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Because I think it'll be way more. The value goes up, yeah.
I mean, what happens if it... I mean, it's got... The building has got its own Wikipedia page.
I don't know
many buildings that have their own Wikipedia page. So there is something about that building that's very special, and it does have a place in my heart. And I genuinely care about the history. Having met the free French soldiers... And studying the history. I mean, I'm not a historian, but just it is just amazing. And there's people that want to get in on the deal, that want to come in and joint venture with me on the deal to finish it. And they want to do it, not for the money, but because they genuinely want a part of the satisfaction of restoring it.
Like I was saying, there's some things you can't put money on.
Yeah.
You know, so that has to be considered the value as well.
Yeah.
Some things you just can't put the money on.
Advice to someone wanting to get into development?
Advice... Don't aim to know absolutely everything about the process. Right. Know enough to know who to ask for information.
Yeah.
And also know enough to be able to go into a JV with your eyes opened. And don't just JV with the wrong person. That's the other thing.
You get
kicked in the...
Sharks in the industry.
You get kicked in the place where the sun don't shine.
Or not even sharks, but sometimes just massive optimists.
Yeah. I hate to say this because it's an industry that I've been in for the last 16 years. But sometimes showing your deals to the wrong person, especially when you're getting into it, people take your deals, man.
Yeah.
They take them and they whisper, little birdies whisper everywhere. Before you know it, your deal's gone.
Yeah.
Unfortunate.
It's something that I've never feared that.
Yeah.
I've always just spoken freely about my deals and I've never feared it, but it has happened a lot.
It does. Yeah.
And I get what you say about, look, man, keep it under wraps.
Keep it in your pocket a little bit. And if you're starting out, you know, get your NDA disclosure agreements.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I say that with anybody who approaches me with a deal who I know is sort of starting out and wants me to have a look. I'm like, have you got an NDA? I'll happily sign it just to teach them the lesson and to get into good practice and habits.
Into
getting people signed.
And you've helped a lot of people, you know, with this, giving advice. Spoke to people on the academy. So guys, if you're listening to this podcast, if you want to get involved, you want to meet Ben, you want to meet me, you want to come down and see some of the projects. Mm. If you're a qualified investor and you want to invest, head down to macleads.co.uk.
Definitely.
If you want to not just invest, but if you've got deals and you want to send them through, go on to macleads.co.uk, come and join, Come and join the money. The pie is big.
The pie is big.
The sky is the limit. So yeah. Awesome, man. Ben, thanks so much for coming on.
No, thanks for having me, Samuel.
It's been difficult getting him to come on and open up and share, but he's done it. He's the man. Guys, thank you for watching. I'll see you in the next video.
100%. Cheers, Samuel.
Cheers, man.